Hello, listener. What you're about to hear is a What Are We Da Show patron unlock. This is material which our Patreon supporters have early access to. If you'd like to experience these episodes when they're at their freshest, become a What Are We Da Show patron today at patreon.com/WARUIDESHOU. Hello, friends. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and NBs, to our second stream. This is Given, episode 7. What's up, my doglets? How's it going, everybody? I hope you're well on this Friday. And I've decided now, just impromptu, I'm going to start referring to all the patrons as my doglets, just so you know. The laughing man that you hear is the lovely, lovely voice of Shadon. How you doing, Shadon?
I will forgive you for calling our patrons doglets. Only if the spelling of doglet is D-A-W-G. Doglets.
Done.
Okay, that'll do. But yeah, otherwise I'm doing well, everyone. I'm super psyched to talk about this particular episode of Given. Well, any given episode of Given. Haha, put another one in the tip jar. that change is clinking all the time, honestly.
It's an evergreen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's a bar tab for an evening now. Fully set up and financed. With the amount of time we start that.
Before we start recording, I have to admit that my confidence is a little bit wounded for this episode, because a few minutes ago, well, no, it's been more than that. It's a few hours ago at this point. I was giving a talk to some students, university students, about using some software. And afterward, one of them made what, upon reflection, was clearly a joke. And I was like, took it entirely seriously and asked him to repeat it a couple times. And the fact that I didn't get it, that it was a joke, like, it made him look incredibly crestfallen. He just looked so, so sad. And I was just like, well, this is it. I've now crossed the line. I'm so old. I've lost my sense of humor. Time to pack it up. So yeah, I'm gonna go into this feeling wounded confidence-wise, but hopefully maybe talking about this show will pick me up and I can feel good by the end of it.
Not to worry, I've got a few jokes of my own lined up, and I won't need to repeat them because they're all going to be bad anyway. You'll see how bad they are the first time around. But yeah, ooh, what an episode. Tumbling Dice, a Rolling Stones song, by the way, as it turns out. I'd listened to it beforehand. It was all right. I know that's killed all of our Rolling Stones fans who are also Given fans. I'm not sure what the Venn diagram of that looks like.
I was going to ask, what does that look like?
But yeah, I'm very sorry, but like, it was just okay.
This is my reaction to most Rolling Stones music, honestly. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of it.
Yep.
So let's see if we can harmonize here. Given, episode 7, we're going to launch into discussion about it, skipping the summary as we do on second stream. Mr. Don, Doug Don, what say you about this week's Given? Where would you like to start in our examination of the material?
There's the big moment that, you know, I feel very sorely tempted just to lead into immediately. Let's, you know, get right into the prime roast beef that is this episode's pivotal scene.
Yeah.
But I also just want to make jokes as well to try and lead in with that. So I suppose I'll start by saying that at least I'm glad that the show recognizes how thirsty Ueno Ami is, because he's constantly drinking water.
You know, I hadn't picked up on that, but Yeah, he's a super thirsty kid.
Everyone's so super fucking thirsty in this show. It's incredible.
They're always buying drinks, hitting each other with drinks, drinking said drinks.
Yeah. I mean, Given's got plenty of positive messages behind it, but, well, it's very clearly also saying, you know, stay hydrated, kids. Don't, you know, don't dry out. I'm like, that's a good message. Thank you, Given. Awesome. Love it. All right. No. I can make jokes about, you know, that all day, or certain jokes about trash I'll be coming up with in a little while once we cover a patron question. But no, let's actually talk about the big scene. The big, big scene. Now, just again to put cards on the table here, in case you happen to be listening to this out of order for some inexplicable reason or have no idea who the fuck I am, which is probably for the best, but that's an aside for later. I'm a cis-set man, and I'm obviously covering a show that is LGBTQ+, like, you know, it's about boy love, it's about gay romance. So in much the same way, you know, as I've said before, that technically I could, in theory, you know, write a very long research paper, or even a book on, you know, what it's like to be pregnant. As someone who will never be pregnant himself, I am fundamentally, you know, incapable of properly answering that question in full. And that therefore similarly applies here. However, as old friend of the podcast and wonderful person Kay of Anime Is Lit once saw me, and it's stuck with me ever since then because it felt very profound, indeed is very profound. Queerness is not unknowable and shouldn't be treated as such. So even though, you know, I'm going to operate inherently and by default from a certain level of ignorance on the topic, I still think it's important that I try and talk about it and understand it and, you know, get with it. So with that long screed out of the way, I'm very much apologizing for people who've already heard that 1,000 times before, but again, just want to make it clear that I'm no one special in this regard. Let's talk about the scene between Akihiko and Ueno-Yama when they discuss basically the moment when which Ueno-Yama realizes that he is gay. I fucking love this scene. I love this scene so much. It's just magnificent. In fact, Akihiko himself is just great in this entire show. He's really come into his own as like the big brother kind of, you know, the male equivalent of the mother hen thing. I don't know what you describe it as. I'm sure, you know, you all can chime in at home with your own suggestions. Just to give a quick bit of context on this particular discussion, Akihiko, like, is very in tune with, like, the band members, like, the needs and wants, with the exception of Haruki, who he's... Well, actually, no, I take that back. I think he maybe does have an idea that Haruki has very strong feelings for him, and he's playing with him deliberately. But to what, you know, end that is, and also his relationship with Murata, I think it is, who we now learn the name of, the mysterious black-haired violin guy that he lives with, that's still not quite yet fully clear. But
Tortured genius.
The tortured genius. Well, when you live in a completely plain, ordinary, you know, basement that looks like the inside of a rent-a-cop's, you know, prison cell, I'm not surprised that you'd feel that way.
It really does.
Decorate your fucking room, Akihiko. Come on, man. Get with the times.
Wasn't it Murata's room?
Get with the fucking size, Murata. Decorate your room, man. Come on. And it put looks some like color in there.
He loves the fucking drab charcoal and gray. Like, honestly, decor.
If you told me that Murata's previous, like, accommodation was a steel shipping container, I'd buy that.
Yes.
Fuck's sake. This has
stainless steel appliances. It has stainless steel everything.
Exactly.
Great. Sold.
It's very airy. Anyway, let's go back to the topic at hand. So Akihiko basically jokingly says, like, have you already had your mitts over him, you filthy, filthy kid, you? And he then says to Ueno-Yama, look, right, are you thinking to yourself, like, you know, it's not normal for you to feel, you know, interest in men or boys? Like, you know, that you should be interested in girls instead? No, I've been interested in boys as well. It was a long time ago. That's probably him, you know, white lying a little bit, because his own relationship with Murata is still very much, you know, leading towards the active and ongoing. But yeah, he points out to Ueno-Yama, and I want to explain very briefly something about this discussed in the previous episode, which was the idea that the show is very normative, if you want to call it that, if that's even a word. I'm sure I've completely made that up out of nowhere, or normative even, about homosexual relationships, in that it seems that in the universe of Given, or the, whatever you want to call it, the Givenverse, that's the new multiverse I've named as, that people talk about relationships, homosexual relationships, very, you know, no, like, it's no big deal, it's homosexual. It's the, you know, the people in question. that make or break the importance of talking about it. Like when it's like, you guys had sex. Like, to me, that particular conversation was not, you guys had sex, ew, but more like, you guys had sex? Like, what the fuck are you two doing? It would make, in if it were like, you know, guy and a girl or two girls, it would be presented similarly, if not the same. That's the way that I think the show has presented thus far, and it's the way it's been very normative about that has been a strength of it, because it presents, you know, being LGBT plus as a normal thing. You know, it's not something that is unusual or strange. But there is a counter argument that can be made, Sam. Trust me, I'm going somewhere with this. That is perhaps not the healthiest thing to do right now, because our current world, the real world, is not perfect. There are people out there who, you know, are homophobic or transphobic or any sort of thing like that. And it's also not unreasonable to think that as normative as this, or, you know, as normal as the show presents LGBTQ plus relationships, that people like Ueniyama, who are growing up dealing with their sexuality and learning that they are, I say this with massive air quotes, not normal. Massive, massive air quotes. Like, at least not as far as society dictates.
Exactly. That's the key point. And, yeah. You know, Ueniyama, I love that he asks, like, is there something wrong with me? Because I think it shows that the show is not being totally naive, idyllic, and utopian about same-sex relationships. Like, no, yeah. It still takes place in this world that is, you know, hostile to it, or at least othering of it.
Yeah, exactly. It gives it a unusual nature to it. And that, I think, is really, really important as well, because, like, treating something very normally that isn't in the real world currently felt as normal, again, massive air quotes here, I think could be doing a disservice to some people who would watch this show and think to themselves, like, I'm glad that it recognizes who I am, but at the same time, like, I don't have it anywhere near as easy as any of these people. And that could even just be the case of in your own head, not because you've had bad experiences necessarily. You know, people are, by their nature, anxious, and anxiety, you know, can be a massive thing. I mean, again, this is where I must say this is the cutoff point for my ultimate understanding, because I've not really ever questioned my own sexuality growing up. So I can't pretend to, you know, truly understand that. But I can certainly, again, imagine and get that, you know, I don't know who I am, what I am, who I'm interested in. Is that right? Is that wrong? There could be 1,001 contexts around that which that exists. It could be, you know, you live in a religious family, for example, and that can be an extra pressure. All sorts of different things. So if it were, as I say, the show just presents it as like business as usual, that it's otherwise treated the same as hetero relationships, while that's a nice thing to think about, that's a good place to get to, that's where we would want to be in the future, that's not where we are right now. And so Ueniyama's feelings being expressed this way and Akihiko's responses and his means of drawing that out and reassuring him are extremely valuable. Like, I can't think personally of a show, in anime at least, that has done something like this to this level before, where it's handled both those elements of being very normative about LGBTQ plus relationships, but at the same time also accepting and relating to the anxieties that people grow up feel when they're coming to terms with their own sexuality for the first time. I mean, can you think of one that does it as well as this? Because I sure as shit can.
No. not right offhand in terms of the anime world.
Yeah, it's so strange, like, that it's taken this long for that to happen. But I must say, I'm so happy it has. Like, again, even though I'm not someone who's questioned his own sexuality really in his entire life and is cishet, like, I can still appreciate the immense value this scene must have to someone who, say, is of Ueniyama's age. Like, look, let's imagine, just hypothetically here, that there's someone out there, you know, who is watching, who started watching the show because, like, hey, there's a band, you know, like, I play in a band or I play a musical instrument, this would be good, who incidentally may or may not have known about it being also a boil of content, and also was, you know, questioning their own sexuality, you know, like, can you imagine what it must feel like to watch the events of this show unfold for them and to see how it validates them and recognizes their experiences as authentic, genuine, and serious?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You're struggling and we see you.
Absolutely. Now, acknowledging it on its own is certainly a good thing, but I want to also very quickly speak about Akihiko's construction as a character and aesthetics in relation to this. Now, bear with me here, this is going to sound a bit crazy, but just...
Oh, hey, can I say something really quick that's germane to what you were just saying before we get too far away from it? Just really quickly wanted to point out that... there is a part in that discussion between Akihiko and Uechi. Ueno-yama.
If you call me Shidechi at any point, I'm going to slap you, by the way. I'm just playing that out.
I'm scribbling that down for later.
I've scribbled some details down. Kill Doc horribly, painfully. Anyway,
buy
carry
a
on.
Coffin. Measure him for coffin.
No, I'm not even doing that. I'm not giving you that privilege. Fuck that. That's effort, man. I'm not doing that.
Oh, no. We'll discuss this off mic. So, whenever Aki says, that he has been with other men before, and Ueno-yama, it's like, spits out his water, right? Like,
yes.
You kind of just isolate on that scene. You could see that being done in certain other anime, that the joke would specifically be, well, it would be a joke, first of all, and it would be specifically about, ooh, like, you're gay, like, you've been with other dudes, like, oh my god. But I feel like here, the way it's handled, it just didn't feel like mean-spirited at all. It very much felt like you're just telling me your sexual history. Like, he could have said anything, right, about his sexual history, and I feel like in that society, that would make someone else spit their water out. Like, oh, you're telling me this right now in public, this kind of conversation. And yeah, it just didn't feel like mean or targeting, and that was really nice to see.
Maybe though, it's because Ueno-yama recognized, wait a minute, this guy's with my sister.
Oh, yeah, no, there's that layer too. Like, whoa, like, surprising, right? I mean, I didn't think that. Yeah, totally.
But it's not brought up explicitly, mind you, but I do wonder if that will come to a head at some point. But anyway, your point you just brought up then is actually also very relevant to what I was just about to mention about Akiko's, like, design character-wise.
Okay.
Because another reading you can take on what you just said there is that I think that a lot of people often prejudge as someone's sexuality based on their appearance. Like, if you see a guy who, like, you know, is very effeminate, you know, you might assume that you know that they're gay or even bi. Like, aesthetics play a lot in prejudging like someone's sexuality, or at least assuming that, in my opinion. And I'd be willing to wager that if I showed, let's say, a couple of dozen people a still image of Akiko, let's take the one, for example, where he's showing off his biceps, and I'd say, what way do you reckon this guy swings? Do you reckon he's straight, bi, or gay, or somewhere in between? I reckon that a majority of people who I showed this to would probably say he's straight. Why is this relevant to anything, you might wonder? Now, again, this is kind of in the same vein as, you know, the whole, we don't live in an ideal world, but it'd be nice if we did. And so, unfortunately, a non-ideal world requires non-ideal solutions. But I think that if you're, you know, growing up and you find yourself, like, you know, questioning your own sexuality, that it might even be a comfort, dare I say, to see someone presented as so masculine as Akihiko be gay or be bi, because it divorces, like, or rather demolishes your preconceptions or your biases towards someone's sexuality based on how they look. And I think that plays in part to Ueno-yama's reaction there. He's like, a buff dude like you? No! Impossible! This cannot be. I mean, take Vin Diesel, for example. Dude is, like, you know, built like a brick shithouse, but he's gay. I wouldn't personally have had him marked up as that myself based on my own biases. But I can, again, this is speaking strictly as someone who is on the outside looking in and is still trying his best to understand, even though I ultimately will never truly comprehend it properly. I think that, you know, until it's not needed anymore, that there can be a great benefit to seeing someone who is so masculine be gay, because it can then, as I say, untangle or negate your conceptions of how, you know, you should look personally as someone who is also gay or bi.
Totally.
I mean, this is like, you know, the counter-argument or the counter-examples to those two fuckers from Persona 5, who I'm always so very fond of bringing up because they're just so shit. All in all, this scene, like, from start to finish, is the highlight of the episode, and arguably I'd say the highlight of the series thus far. It's so powerful. It's very offensive to like how people that age would speak, especially when you have an older person like Akiko is, you know, very... He's very world-wise. He's clearly had a lot of his own experiences that were related in the flashbacks we've seen, plus what's continually going on with Murata right now. And he's got a good finger on the pulse of the band, and he's actually acting in his own little way to, you know, try and guide them all to finding the answers that he in part already has, because he seems very at peace with his life. What the context is between him and Murata, and also what his relationship is with the Aoi, is still up in the air. I'm sure we'll find that out in the coming episodes. But nonetheless, like, in some way, like, the anime itself is taking on the role Akiko presents, that of a, you know, an elder figure that's, it's got the experience, is willing to relate it to you and help you find your own way as a result. I could not praise this more. Now, one final thing I will note, because it's important I say this now that I've gotten all that out of my mouth. I must again remind people, as a cis guy, I'm inherently unable to, like, give the 100% S rank examination of this that it obviously deserves. So I would, as always, very strongly suggest that you go seek out LGQ Plus analyses and critiques and reviews of this show in particular. Like, I mean, I'm not unhappy, of course, to have people listening to me talk about this. Indeed, I'm still very stunned and very happy that so many people wanted us to cover this material. But you shouldn't, you know, always eat the same food at the same restaurant all the time, is all I'm saying. Go seek other, you know, sources and get other opinions on that can, you know, give you the true insight that this material deserves, in my opinion. Just a PSA there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's hard to argue with your point that this is, like, the strongest scene in the show so far. It was incredibly powerful. It just, wow. I mean, and again, everything you said about your own gender and sex applies to me as well. And so it was not one of those things that, seeing it, you know, I felt personally seen, but just being an empathetic person, I think it's easy to be like, wow, like, I think, yeah, I bet this really touched a lot of people. And it feels very genuine and authentic, and feels like it would speak to people, and it's just really cool. It's so cool to see that. I really love this scene a lot.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with it. I mean, if the show ended here right now, it would be bad. Like, as in, when I say bad, I don't mean like as in like the story itself would be bad. Like, oh, fucking hell, really? But it would be bad that, you know, it had ended abruptly. But I think it would still end on such a high note for having such a scene like that. It's crazy to me to think of how awesome that was, because in reality, that should be, as I say, the norm. Its existence is perpetuated on, you know, the way our world currently works, which isn't perfect by a long shot. So the point that, you know, as powerful as that scene is, in, say, however many years' time it takes for us to finally reach a parity of understanding and sympathy and empathy of people of, you know, different sexualities other than being het, like, that then it would become irrelevant. It's one of those weird, like, Schrodinger scene kind of things. I don't know. Mm. But yeah, like, could not praise it enough, but holy shit. And also funny. Very funny as well. Like, oh yeah, by the way, you've added Mitsov into it. And like, again, it's comedy. Like, it takes... It's that good kind of comedy where it's not mocking or degrading Ueno-Yama for his feelings. It's, like, comedy to me is about exposing absurdity. And there is an absurdity, I'd argue, inherent in having to hide feelings that are very natural and very genuine and even beautiful. Like, you shouldn't have to hide that.
Right.
So Akiko, like, making comment like, you've had your grease mitts over him already, haven't you? Oh my God, what have you been doing to poor innocent Matthew? You've had your sordid ways with him, you fiend! Ooh! I don't know where that came from. I'm so sorry.
I was enjoying it.
Like, that is funny, but it's also against the heart of the problem, which is that, you know, it is about the absurdity and the ridiculing that absurdity of having a desire or a pressure exuded from somewhere to question, like, if you should even talk it out. Or even, as you've rightly pointed out, when it says, what's wrong with me? And, well, the obvious answer is nothing. Apart from the fact that his nose disappears whenever he gets really exasperated, I think he should probably go see a surgeon about that.
Yeah, right. He takes on a gray pallor and his nose disappears.
Have you ever suffered from receding nose syndrome?
And yeah, that line that you're talking about, that Akihiko says, is again, it just wasn't, it wasn't this mean-spirited sort of thing. It was like, I need to help Uenoyama feel better and ease him into this moment, because I feel like we're gonna, I would like to have a serious conversation with him. And humor can have that kind of disarming effect, where then, you know, you could be more vulnerable and more open with your interlocutor.
It's it's a very good icebreaker if used appropriately.
Yeah. And so, speaking of vulnerability, this leads quite nicely into the first thing I wanted to say. So throughout the episode, we kind of get more of a glimpse into Akihiko's perspective on many things, particularly what it was like for him to fall in love. I really, really like this, because he talks about it as a really, almost a kind of violent experience. He talks about it as something that is, rather than being sweet, it's very intense.
Yeah.
And he speaks about how difficult it is, because being in love requires you to expose yourself emotionally. It requires a vulnerability that is very risky, because doing that can leave you open to being really, really crushed, really, really hurt from someone else, either intentionally or unintentionally. And that's a tricky and difficult thing that human beings have to kind of go through. And I found an interesting sort of parallel between these feelings that he's talking about, these things that he's saying, and what Mafuyu is telling himself at the midpoint of the episode about writing his lyrics. Like, we've talked a lot about in previous episodes kind of art and its effects on the artist themselves, like the healing effect, the detoxification, and cathartic kind of outcomes for an artist making art. But, you know, there's another side, another component to this. Like, when you make art, you are putting something out there into the world, right? Mafuyu says, what is it that I want to tell these people?
Drink water, motherfuckers! Whoa!
It's almost as if he's thinking about it for the first time, right? Like, not just what do I want to write, how do I kind of grapple with my feelings, but like, what is it that I want to communicate? And like, art is again shown here to be something that is a conduit, right, between an artist's intention and feeling and the observer of the art, the audience. And it's like this chance for communication. It's an artist deciding how and in what way they can kind of let people in to their life. It is an artist being very vulnerable. It is someone exposing themselves emotionally to a group of people at a very big risk. So I think what I got from these two threads of the show is that producing a piece of art is almost like an expression of love. An expression of love to the world, to your audience.
Unless you're Adam Sandler.
Well,
Well, actually, yeah, that's a very good counter argument. thank God for you, Doc. Like, I was just thinking then, like, I only mentioned him specifically because I was writing him in as a joke into a script I'm doing for Akikin, which is probably the first time Adam Sandler's ever going to have been funny in the past couple of years.
How dare you make fun of me and my Hollywood career?
That's a really bad Adam Sandler impression. He does this kind of voice.
Oh, this kind of voice. It's me, Angry Sandler.
Those are the two, I think, ranges that he has.
Yeah, sounds about right. If I may move away from the water boy, let's talk instead about, just very briefly, go back to a point you made about what Akiko is saying when he's giving us the inner monologues. Like, there's something very primal about the language that he uses to describe his emotions. He doesn't really analogize or use metaphor or simile even to describe his feelings. He's not saying he's fluttering away like a butterfly. He just simply says it very raw, like he had pain like going through him. There are some metaphors in there, but otherwise, like, when he speaks to us, like, it feels like a very genuine expression of like his emotions, like, just boiled down to their raw nature. And it got to the point where he ended up quitting the violin, as a side note, because he couldn't ultimately compete with Murata. Like, I think he just felt outshone by him. So I think we're going to have to wait for more information on his and Murata's relationship. Although we now at least have Murata's name, which is good.
Yes.
And we also understand that, like, how they came to meet. But yeah, like, Akiko, interestingly enough, like, he seems to live in this, like, kind of dichotomy where he has the best understanding of the other band members and pushes them subtly and overtly towards sourcing things out. But there is that overhanging question I mentioned of him and Yayoi versus, you know, him and Murata. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the actual true nature of the relationship here? And funnily enough, this actually now leads into a convenient talking point that I'm going to mention in this episode, but it brings up points in others, which is the show has explores a couple of times, or looks at a couple of times, the idea of rumors, gossiping, and, you know, spying, eavesdropping, whatever you want to call it. Because we've had numerous scenes, like, of characters listening in on other conversations and getting interpretations from them that are obviously incorrect. I mean, we have... God, what was her name again?
Kasai, gosh. Yeah. Said it. They finally said it.
Yeah, we have Kasai's, Kasai's own, you know, her telling Ueniyama of Mafu's history. We've got Haruki's previous scenes where he's, you know, mentioning about Yayoi meeting with Akiko, and that scene I mentioned of the two guys, like, you two had sex! Was it good?
I trusted you.
Was it good? Dude, how was it? Like, I don't know how it went. But yeah, like,
how big was it? No.
Well, it was a 44-ouncer, you know. I needed a lot to drink afterwards. It was completely full of cherry coke.
Anyway.
But yeah, like, this has come up a couple of times in the show's room where we've had characters who are relating to us, like, what they know of things they've seen and the way characters have interacted. But the show itself is also taking a grim look on people spreading rumors and not having the full picture. Like, in this episode, we have Sasuke and Pulling's like, hey, check this out. It's, you know, it's Kasai and Ueniyama under the tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G, whiz!
Elbow, elbow, elbow.
Yes, exactly.
These kids need an anime about... I would watch a spin-off anime about the basketball bros from Given. It would rule. Oh my gosh. They make me so happy.
They're a pair of good lads, those two. They're all right. Although they are, of course, giving Mafuyu the wrong impression here, because we'll be getting to Kasai's apology in a little bit. But yeah, they aren't making out under that tree.
No.
Although you could technically argue, I suppose, depending on how you feel about Kasai, that Ueniyama is definitely taking the trash out.
Oh my god. So mean. So fucking mean. Oh, what a
burn. I couldn't resist. I'm so sorry, but someone was going to make that joke at some point. I at least figured before I spoiled it, I would try and make it first.
Too soon.
Oh, dear. To be fair, she did apologize, though. So that's good. But yeah,
she was in tears.
Yeah, but we'll get to her in a moment. So yeah, like, the show at numerous points has brought this up. And I think it's curious, like, how you compare, like, how the characters related to the audience in their own inner monologues, information that they know, versus, you know, like, what we're seeing happen in the show, and what the, you know, when they have these scenes of seeing other people from a distance, not getting the full picture. Like, it's interesting how the show, to me, like, seems to have this kind of, like, again, a kind of dichotomy where, okay, the show's deliberately not going to give you the whole picture, but it's also a bad thing, funnily enough, that so many characters in show are not getting the full picture. I'm onto you, Given. I've got you figured out.
We know.
But yeah, maybe that's a lesson to us as the audience that we shouldn't be so presumptive about events because we don't have the full, you know, thing end, which is why I'm ultimately not speculating on Murata's relationship with Akiko just yet. Although, you know, I do get the very distinct impression that Murata definitely has his strings wound too tight. I couldn't resist.
Man, they just keep coming.
I just couldn't resist. Don't judge me. Don't judge me.
I really liked, can I just say, like, the way that Akihiko characterized him through dialogue when that scene when he goes up to him to hug him, like, it was so brilliant. Like, the dialogue for this whole fucking episode, like, the writing was so good. Like, it really, really just pulls off so well everything that the show wants to pull off. And it could have gone bad a few times, but it was so strong.
Yep, exactly. Do you have any other points you want to bring up, Doc?
Oh yeah, for sure. So, let's see. So yeah, toward I guess it's toward the end of the episode when we have Akihiko talking to Mafuyu. Whenever he tells Haruki to take home Uenoyama and give him a push, it's more like give him a push. and then we get the wonderful super fun Game of Life board game visuals, which made me
it's the final level from Gunstar Heroes.
Oh god damn, I haven't thought about that in so long.
Or Cuphead, if you want to, you know, pull that out. So clearly the villain of Given is going to be King Dice.
I mean, 100% this episode is about Dice. Yes,
I could just totally see him, like, looking over all the characters. He's just there, like, with his logos on.
Mr. King Dice. Oh, what a great game. But let's not talk about that. So, So during that part, right, when he's given Mafuyu his helmet and jacket, he needs to put these on, he lights up a cigarette and says, you know, if you want to write these lyrics, you have to come to terms with your past. You have to decide if you want to run away from it, or if you want to write about it, if you want to express it. And that just made me think of the power of language when it comes to kind of it being a tool to apply to our experiences. I mean, this is a very traumatic thing. And I imagine when Mafuyu told Uenoyama about his experience, that was probably like the first person he like talked to about it that wasn't involved. And if you were involved, like, I'm sure you didn't need to talk about it. You didn't need to describe it. Like, this is his first discussion with someone about it. And he keeps not writing because he's practicing his guitar stuff. And so the rest of the band, Akihiko in particular, wants him to really decide if he's going to do this. And, like, expressing, like, trauma in your life through language can really kind of give it a reality, can help it sink in, because you're having to kind of look at it, really look at it to give it words, to put words to it, to describe it. You've got to kind of clear-eyed, squarely look at it. You got to wrap your mind around it. You have to accept it. And maybe he's got to figure that out if he accepts it, if he wants to kind of confront it. And his expressing it will give it this kind of reality, this sort of finality. And then also other people hearing it and other people expressing it. Like, I think it was, this is a very sort of non-serious example, but there's a very famous footballer called Dennis Bergkamp who is from Holland. And when he first got signed by the famous London club, Arsenal, he said famously that it didn't really sink in until he went back to his hotel room and heard on teletext someone else saying Dennis Bergkamp has signed for Arsenal. He's like, oh, it really happened. Despite the fact that he was like training and at the facility and signing the pay, like it didn't really have that sense of reality for him until is verbalized through language by someone else.
Yeah,
and so there's that component too. Hmm. And Mafuyu and his trauma and how he's kind of dealing with it, I think is being handled with a lot of care. And I really enjoyed that scene quite a bit.
Yeah. That scene, like, it... I think that Akiko's approach of, like, being very direct with Mafuyu, I think at some point it's necessary to do that. Sometimes some people do need a very strong push in order to get things going. You can't just simply, as Akiko did at the start of the episode, poke someone with a drumstick. You need to actually give them a full-blown shove. So, yeah, I think he's got a good handle on, like, how to solve his band members' problems, or at least, well, not solve them, but at least put them on the path to solving them. So, yeah, definitely a highlight episode for him. Like, what a guy.
What a guy.
Can I also just add, like, I love this moment of subtle humor, and I don't know if it's intentional or not, but again, Akiko's like, Haruki's like, oh, look, Mafuyu's awake after his little nap. Let's go back in and keep practicing. And Akiko grabs his arm and says, no, come out, stay out here and have a smoke with me. But his cigarette is barely even been burned down. And I just, in my head, I've got this, like, headcanon image of him just smoking two cigarettes at once just to try and keep up the image. But yeah, that was funny. But again, it also showed his character that he was like, no, look, like, give them time. I know what's going on here. Just chill. Just chill, man. I have one other thing I want to bring up, and this is just a very small point, but it's a visual callback that I really appreciated. So Murata notes to Akiko, like, that he's a slave, quote-unquote. Not in the most serious sense, thankfully. This isn't, you know, Shield Hero all over again. Thank Christ for that. Bury that shit deep in the earth where it can't be found. Anyway, but he responds with, you know, at least call me a freeloader. So when Murata later falls asleep on the bed, it looks like he's fallen straight, like, face first, like, lying sideways on half on half off, which I'm fairly sure from my memory was the exact same way Akiko fell on the bed previously at Haruki's place.
Totally.
Like, it feels to me like that they're living kind of, he's living like a parallel existence both in Murata's home, if that is indeed his home, and Haruki's, even right down to just little details like that. Which I thought was a neat little callback. Nothing too major, as I say, but just a visual contrast there.
Yeah, that was super cool. I enjoyed that.
All right. Do you have any more points to bring up, Doug?
Yeah, I do. This is not really analysis so much as just an observation. That boy, what a bit of honesty, and. From Uenoyama, when shortly after Mafuyu's inner monologue moment, when he's talking about what he wants to tell the people or asking himself that, Uenoyama himself has one. He says, I'm scared of the song that he's going to come up with.
Yes.
So I don't want him, good.
I don't want him singing a song about loving someone else.
Yeah. Like, so just, like, self-aware and honest. And who knows if these are, like, sort of subconscious thoughts or conscious ones, really. It's pretty safe to assume they're conscious ones. But, my original thought when he first started to speak that he was scared, I was thinking, well, is this because he feels like maybe these are some big, complicated feelings that Mafuyu is going to communicate, and Uenoyama is involved in them, and, like, his kind of involvement would be something that he was afraid of. But he ends up being pretty forthright about the fact that it comes from a place of envy. And that was so, it made me feel like so warmly toward him. And I just, it just want him to succeed. I want him and Mafuyu to have that moment where they come together and Uedoyama is able to make peace with the fact that Mafuyu has loved someone else before.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I find it interesting, by the way, to note that in this episode, Ueriyama's anxiety goes from, you know, am I gay or not, to, okay, I'm gay, but now how dare he have loved someone else? Like, again, feels very authentic. Like, just because, you know, you accept that part of you doesn't mean then, you know, you necessarily have it under control or don't. I mean, hell, that applies to anyone of any sexuality. How many times I can think of, for example, where I've been anxious about my feelings towards someone else. So, yeah, like, all very authentic, all very relatable. Every part of this was fantastic. All right.
And finally, all we need is some giant robots, because we have what is basically a Macross love triangle here. We got the music, they're musicians. Ooh. And we got the romance, the love triangle, the Akihiko, Murata, Yayoi, and now we just need someone of that trio to be a robot pilot, and then this will become an unofficial part of the Macross canon.
Sounds right to me. I've just realized, by the way, I would actually be pretty down for listening to Mafuyu cover What About My Star. I think totally. He would nail the shit out of that song.
That would be awesome.
I think he would. Oh, man. Right. Kira, well, Kira. Shall we cover our patron question then?
Oh, let's.
All right. So this comes in from Tallulah Bell and goes thusly. What did you think of Kasai's apology? Does it redeem her for you at all? Do you want to field this one first, Doc, or shall I?
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't feel any strong hatred for Kasai. I mean, she, up to this point, she has, been what Ueno-Yama himself says as petty. And he and she recognized that it was petty of her to do that, to throw some doubt into the relationship of Ueno-Yama and Mafuyu. But she didn't... It was really a kind of sort of tentative, like, toe dip into that. She didn't really throw Mafuyu under the bus. She didn't cast a bunch of aspersions on him. She didn't lie. She said a little bit of what the truth was and then apologized immediately and was like, oh, but these are just rumors. I don't know. It's probably not true. And I mean, she likes the boy. I mean, you know, that's kind of all she's in. And she's had some feelings like behind their back of like, grr, they're together. But like, I mean, come on. You don't want to kill her over that. Like, to me, she doesn't really need redeeming. She's just, I wish there was more to her. But yeah, I mean, she's done nothing in my eyes that needs redemption. And so as far as her apology, you know, I'm glad that they had that moment that we can now kind of put that chapter behind us as far as like Kasai, the one who spread the rumor. It's like, she's deeply sorry about it, and she admitted, and she was very honest and open with him. So yeah, it was fine. I mean, she probably felt stronger about it than most people would have, I feel like.
Well, one thing that's important to know about the apology is that it was unprompted. It happened because she felt like Yuen-Yan was being nice to her by helping her take out the trash, but there wasn't an external pressure of like, you did a bad thing, like. She came with it on her own initiative, which I think is noteworthy.
She's clearly contrite.
Yeah. For me, I think that you touched on this, and it leads into my overall feeling, which is that ultimately I know this is going to sound very contrarian to what I've just said, but just trust me, I'm going somewhere with this. Like, I don't think it does redeem her for me, but here's the reason I say that. Because I don't think Kasai functions as her own character. I think that her involvement in the narrative is essentially to feed Ueniyama that information, and then that's that, at least as presented thus far. That's the real importance of her role thus far, which is to give Ueniyama more information about Mafuyu, not to have her own involvement or her own arc necessarily. In theory, she essentially serves the same purpose as, I know this is going to sound incredibly corny, but Ueniyama just happened to, you know, find a newspaper in the library that happens to have Yuki's death on the front page. That's her function, really, in my opinion. Yeah.
So, it's true. I can't argue with you, you know.
So thus far in the show's run, I don't think she's enough of a fully fleshed out character of her own for it to really matter about one way or another. Like, I like that the apology happened, don't get me wrong. But if ultimately this is the point where her relevance to the plot ends, well, that's that.
Put her back in the fridge.
Oh, no. Oh, harsh, man. I thought I was cold. Woo. But that being said, there's something I just want to also mention, which is that I think there is potential for her to have more involvement later in the story, particularly in if she ultimately finds out that, you know, Ueniyama is indeed gay and has those feelings for Mafuyu. I think it would be a really nice moment for her to be encouraging towards him, to say, look, to do the, you know, MJ, go get him, Tiger.
Go get him, Tiger. Yeah.
That kind of thing. I think that would be really nice. But I am also of the opinion that she certainly does not rise to the same level as either Haruki or Akihiko in terms of relevance to the overall plot or involvement or being fleshed out, which is unfortunate. I mean, for me personally, like, I adore all the LGBTQ stuff in this, but I think they could go a little further by including, I know this is going to sound like the worst kind of betrayal ever, but I think that if you could include, you know, some more involvement from the heterosexual characters getting involved, just, again, just being on board. I know. That's
where are the hurts? Bring in my hurts.
My God, there's going to be a petrol bomb going through my window any second now. But I only say that because I think that, you know, it would be good just to have them involved a little bit more, if only, again, just to, you know, show that side of things where they are encouraging and supportive of, you know, of the main characters. I mean, take Yayoi, for example. I reckon at this particular point in the story, with the exception of her tying into that whole, you know, rumors and speculation a bad thing, which is when Haruki, like, notices, like, this is an earlier episode where he notices her running up to meet Akihiko and, like, the camera frames her differently than how she was framed with her brother previously. Like, I think you could jettison Yayoi entirely from the story without any real consequence beyond losing the comedic moments between her and Ueniyama. I mean, she's fun to have in the show, don't get me wrong, but her function at the moment really has just been for comic relief. So some more substantive involvement, I think, from the heterosexual characters would be good. Again, I'm not saying, you know, for that to be the whole, like, well, actually, maybe you should be with me instead of that boy.
No.
Like, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is that I think that there could be more to them just simply than being superfluous, for lack of a better term. I mean, like I say, for all that I, like, going back to Kasai, I joke about the newspaper thing, but you could, in theory, just do a find and replace of her involvement with a newspaper or a school article, or, you know, suddenly Ueniyama walks past a bench and he sees that in memory of Yuki 19XX to 2000XX, whatever, Mega Man years, shit like that. and then he pops it together in his head, like, Yuki. And then just, like, flashback to, you know, Mafuyu mentioning Yuki. It would serve the same function, essentially.
Right.
So,
may I respond?
Yeah. You may.
So, I feel like that there's a couple ways to respond. So, I guess the first avenue response that one could have would be like, well, you know, welcome to how gay characters felt in stories, right? Like, super incidental or mischaracterized.
Nope, and, you're absolutely,
you know,
right.
That whole kind of crap. But, like, I feel like while that's true, that is, I don't know, not as, like, constructive of a response. Although I think a valid one and totally fair.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is not that you wish one of the principals was Het, because we want all the characters are there to, like, everything that's there with them and their relationships and those kind of dynamics are so great. I don't think you, and certainly we're not saying, like, no, change one of them to Het because we need some Het representation in the main cast or anything like that.
Absolutely not. No,
that is not the deal. So, no. but I guess what it could serve if one of the characters you mentioned had a larger role. Well, first of all, you know, women characters getting to do substantial things, you know, beyond serve the male cast members, always a good thing. But additionally, like, maybe we don't want the, like, this sort of separation of worlds, right? The gay world and the Het world, and the Hets don't have anything to do with the gay world. They're kind of on their own, isolated in their own world. Like, it would be cool to have, like, some support, encouragement, we are not you, and we're not trying to steal your thunder in the show or anything like that, but, like, we're all kind of together in the same place in the same world, and we support you, and we're, like here for you.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to Kasai for a second, like, I mentioned before the idea or the possibility of later in the show's run, you know, her finding out and her being supportive of Eliana. And to go back to what I said earlier about the idea of, again, exploring your sexuality, coming to understand it as you grow up, I think that it would be helpful to the actual narrative, you know, of coming to terms with that and approving of that and it being a good and healthy thing, if it included some elements of explaining that to people like Kasai who are interested in you as a person, but you're never going to be interested in them back for that particular reason, and conversing with them, like, and having them just be cool with it. I mean, the show generally is cool with it anyway, as far as I can tell. But I think that moving that from subtext to text by making it more explicit as part of a conversation, say, between Kasai and Ueyama, where she could say, when did you start feeling this way? And then he could explain in more detail. And she could say, you know what? I think the world of Ueyama, but ultimately I know that, you know, we'll never be a thing. And you know what? That's totally cool. And you go get him, you know?
Do you think that would feel too didactic?
Possibly. I mean, I'm merely spitballing here. I'm sure there's a way it could be done. I am also going to just stress this point that if that does not happen in whole or in part, that is in no means to the show's detriment.
No. Oh my gosh. This is not us saying, like, well, these are the victory conditions. This is the brass ring show. Come and get it.
Yeah, this is the achieve and unlock moment. Get your gamer score up. No. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just think that this is difficult to phrase without coming across as a prick, I must stress. God, I should have had some more booze before I started this, or any booze for that matter. Although that might have made things worse, potentially. But yeah, don't mistake me here, folks. What I'm not saying here is, you know, I want, you know, a show about, you know, two gay men, like, you know, discovering each other to be less gay. That's fucking stupid. That's not what I want. What I think would be helpful, though, is just for, like, characters like Yayoi and Kasai to have more to do. That, and as I say, as I mentioned in the example I gave, that would be in service of the narrative I just mentioned of two men coming together. Like, everyone plays a part in it, friends, family, and such. Indeed, it makes me wonder where Eniyama's parents, or any of their parents, are. Where the fuck is everyone's parents?
Well, they all grown in
tubes? Fucks if I know.
I think what you might be saying is, like, that you want it to feel, you want these relationships maybe to feel more situated in the real world and not kind of cordoned off.
Something like that, yeah.
From, like, contact with other people that would be interacting with them. But, you know, I guess maybe that would make the whole thing feel less safe. Like, that's part of, like, why the escapism is good and validating.
this is true. I mean, as much as I said before, I praise the scene, you know, for its authenticity about, okay, we don't live in an ideal world, but, you know, that's a good thing that the show presents it as that way, and that you will have difficulties coming to terms with your sexuality as you grow up. Like, at the same time, you know, there is a reason we consume fiction, and a very strong reason for that is escapism. And if it were to be entirely comfy, you know, no one's got any beef about that kind of thing, and you never have any anxieties, I would similarly understand and appreciate that. I would personally, and again, I'm speaking as a cishet man here, so take that with the grain of salt it deserves, I would personally prefer the elements to have been included a little bit more, just, you know, bring up, like, make it feel more authentic to the conflict you might go through when you're coming through that. But your biologists could vary on that, and it's not a bad thing that the show, certainly the opposite of a bad thing, that the show is the way it is and the way it's been constructed. Call this more of an observation than a criticism then, folks. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. It's an interesting thought experiment, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to go back to what Kay told me many, many moons ago when we were doing Devilman, which is queerness shouldn't be treated as unknowable, and certainly Given is not doing that. But I think that getting the het characters involved on that might be a good thing in overall for the show and for the material. If you think I'm talking bullshit, please tell me. Like, by the way, folks, just I'll keep this as an open invite here. Like, I think what ultimately me and Doc will have discussed off cast is, like I say, we're doing our best here to understand the material and, you know, give it its proper credence and its proper dues here. And certainly it is doing everything fantastically, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think we might be well vested in getting the opinions of someone else, maybe a guest on the show. Who knows?
Who can say? It could happen.
Indeed. It could happen. We'll have a think on that. So answer your question, Slither the Bell, after all that. But thank you very much, by the way, for popping that in there, because it's certainly it's a good question in its own right, and it's also given us a lot to think about as a result of that. So thank you for that. But yeah, to get back to answering that, no, it doesn't redeem her for me. But for the reasons I've explained, it's more complicated than me simply thinking, like, well, the trash joke I made before.
Yeah, and I guess my answer will be no, because she doesn't need redemption.
Hmm. We'll see. We'll see how the show plays out. There could, as I say, still be room for her to be involved more. Anyway,
speaking of being involved, listeners, including my doglets. Doglets. Oh, get involved. Get involved. This has been the second stream, which is a show for Watery Dish Show patrons, first and foremost. They are listening to it. You are listening to it fresh when episode 7 has just recently come out. However, if you're not a patron, you're listening to it a couple weeks later, and you may be thinking, well, gosh, I'd love to catch up and you know, listen to these, not only get caught up, but listen to them when they're fresh. Then head on over to patreon.com/watery-show and subscribe. This is the $5 tier. That is the maximum tier. We don't have anything higher than five. We wanted you to be able to get all the bonus content for five max. There are $2 and $3 tiers in which you can be a member of our Discord. If you check the info, you'll see which tiers will allow you to ask questions in the Discord about the show, as Tallulah Bell has done about this show and about Vinland Saga, the other show we're currently covering. There's all sorts of other benefits, other bits and bobs. Shadan has talked about Akikan, a show that he will be covering.
God!
that is for your benefit.
I'm glad someone's getting something out of it.
But also, you know, hey, you may not be able to support us financially, and that is a-okay, but we love you anyway, and we love your listenership and support. You can follow us on Twitter at Watery Dish Show to see when all of our content is dropping. We announce it there. We got a YouTube, we got a SoundCloud, we got Apple Podcasts, all of those platforms you can see our content on, as well as Google Play, Stitcher, what have you. Just check us out. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. That would help us out a whole bunch.
Hell yes.
Hit that like button. Hit the bell.
Smash your face on the keyboard until eventually you're subscribed to us.
That's right. Subscribe in all the places. So,
calls to action. I've studied YouTube 101. I know how this shit works.
Well, he has been Shadon. Shadon, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to talk to you?
You can hit me up at Shaden1010. That's 1010 at the end of my name, because at Shaden is still blocked by some prick who hasn't used his account since 2013. Thank you very much. I will find you. No, I'm kidding. you can message him all you want, by the way. I'm sure he won't answer eventually. But you can hit me up there. And as I said, like, we're still trying to figure this shit out. I'm trying to do my best for it, but I'm not going to pretend that, as I say, that I have a complete understanding of, you know, LGBTQ plus content. Nor will I ever, to be quite honest. That's just inherent to my nature as a person and who I am. But doesn't mean I can't try. Doesn't mean I can't do better. And it also doesn't mean that I won't, you know, turn down any feedback or any comments or any thoughts or opinions you might have on the stuff I've said. Even if you're happy with it, I'd love to hear from all of you. Because shows like this, like, you know, I think Given is fantastic. I think it's technically really proficient. It's very relaxed, very chill, but it's also very important, I think, as well. And I want to hear from all of you how important it's been to you, or how important you feel it would be to others, as much as I've speculated on that. Like, if you've got first-hand experience, like, of watching this show and thinking, I'm so glad that this is the way it's presented, then tell me. Tell me in as much or as little detail as you'd like. I want to be better educated. I want to be better understanding this stuff. And part of that, as I say, comes from actually speaking to people whom would get the full benefit out of a show like this. So yeah, by all means, hit me up there and let me know what you think.
For sure. That goes for both of us. Also, a sort of announcement-ish thing here at the end. We save housekeeping till the end. Our live streams for the next few months are going to be moved over to Twitch exclusively, because we've gotten an unfortunate, though I suppose deserved, copyright strike on YouTube.com. We will still be uploading our weekly discussions of Vinland Saga there. But if you want to get involved live with the chat and discussion and polls, you'll need to go to twitch.tv/WateryDeshow. We have been broadcasting there, but there is where we'll be exclusively for a little bit. We'll let you know when that changes. Again, you can still get VODs of all kinds on YouTube, just no live streaming.
Indeed. We're just hiding from the cops right now. That's the kind of thing. You know, we're doing some guerrilla radio shit here.
That's right.
I'm going to be listening to that when I go out drinking in a minute. It'll be great.
Superb. Well, we'll let you get to that, and we will sign off in the way that we always do, which is to say, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night.